Good evening, Houston, Texas. My name is Sarah Jean. I'm a grateful recovering addict. Hi, y'all. I got to warn you. Listen, if you hear a little southern drawl, it's not from LA. I picked it as soon as I got off the plane, man. That shit was, that I was like, hey, y'all, nice to meet you. Thanks so much. You know what I'm saying? And I think a little bit of it got left over last time I was in Texas, but or maybe it's a sign that I'm supposed to just move here permanently because I love it so much. We're going to have to figure out what we're doing with this because I got some trauma and I got a mad case of ADHD and I ain't going to be able to do shit. I know, unmedicated, all natural, huh? Are we good? Okay, you sure? This is the one that makes me laugh? Oh, I was like, I'm going to speak in this one then. Okay. I want to thank each and every one of you for showing up tonight. I want to thank a loving higher power. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to be trusted to come share a message of hope with you all. I'm so thankful to the committee and all of your hard work. Thank you so much for your selfless, selfless service over these last couple years. Let's give them a round of applause. It takes so much work to be able to put all of this together. It's not just like the work and the planning, but like the inside work. You know what I'm saying? The spiritual principles and all of our affairs type of work and the long hours and times away from your families and all of the extra things that you do out of your love for Narcotics Anonymous and out of your love for the members of Narcotics Anonymous. So thank you so very much. We're so grateful for you. I'm really, really, really excited to be back in Texas. This is absolutely a place that has my entire heart. The love here is, I've traveled a lot around to a lot of different places, man, but there's just a special type of love, a special type of love in Texas. And it really is. And I'm just, I know that I'm here with friends. I know that I'm here with family. And like Michelle said, man, like my goal every single time is that I just pray that I get out of the way, that I get to be a vessel of God's message, man, and really, like, I just hope to plant a seed in your heart. I just hope to plant a seed in your heart, and I pray right now that our hearts are softened, that our minds are open, and if you guys will just do something with me really quick to kind of get centered, we'll kind of settle down in our seats and just take a moment, take a big inhale through our nose, strong exhale through the mouth, and I encourage you just to invite your higher power in. Whatever your higher power might be, if you're depending on somebody else's higher power, just let's not use the doorknob and the fucking light bulb thing. I mean, we hear some advice in here, but it's not all great advice. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to thank Michelle. I love you with my whole entire heart. You have shown me such a beautiful unconditional love, a sisterhood, a common bond. And I'm so grateful for our friendship. I'm so grateful for the soul tie that we have. And you're a really beautiful, incredible person. And I'm so blessed to have you in my life. Thank you for such a wonderful weekend, for your hospitality, your generosity. And thank you, Tim, for sharing her with me. I love the theme of this convention, man. I love themes. I'm really big on words and like the intention of a word. You know, like what we name our home groups are really important. We think about like what is it that we're hearing? What is the theme that we're setting? What is the intention, right? And y'all came together and decided that it was going to be about hope, keeping hope alive in 2025. And that's a really big deal. Keeping hope alive is such a big deal. Like, I can't remember times throughout my life where I had a healthy dose of hope. You know, it was like there was wishes. There was things that I wished and things that I craved and things that I needed and things that I feared and things that I ran from and ran towards. And there was an essence of hope. You know what I mean? Like, I hope the dope don't run out. And I hope the dope man, you know, picks up or answers the phone or stops by or I hope if I spend this amount of time with this person, like maybe I'll get high. Like just maybe, like not even a for sure, but like just the chance. You know what I mean? Or maybe it wasn't even the drugs, like maybe it was just the companionship, or maybe it was just the attention, or maybe it was just so that I felt like I belonged somewhere, man. Like the thing about belonging is so important. So important. And I know that it's not me, and I know that all of our stories are different, but something brought us together. Mm-hmm. something so powerful brought us together here tonight. Because the stories that this room could tell, your story individually, you sitting in this seat, you, your story alone, what brought you here alone, and then you think about the stories collectively in this entire room, the stories this room could tell. Bless you. The challenges, the triumphs, the pain, the loss, the devastation, the despair. The things that we've had to experience to get to a place in our life where enough was enough. And the courage that you've had to show up here tonight to be with a bunch of other weirdos and fucking maniacs. You know what I mean? I'll speak for myself, whatever. I don't give a fuck. But, like it's really cool, man, that we just come to hear a message of hope, right? Just to hear something to fill our spirits up just a little bit, man. And like I never had that experience in my life. I never had somewhere that I was going to get there and it was going to fill me up in some kind of way that I knew I would leave feeling better than when I showed up. Like, I usually showed up somewhere with bubble guts, and I usually showed up somewhere thinking and planning and making sure there was an exit plan just in case. Just always being uncomfortable, always being in this place of limbo, man. I remember very, very clearly. I don't have a whole lot of memories from my childhood. There was a lot of trauma and a lot of abuse in a lot of different ways, and I blocked out a really good portion of it. But what I do remember is really feeling uncomfortable in my own skin, just not liking who I was, and feeling like I needed to show up a certain way in order to be loved, that I couldn't be myself. I didn't know what myself was. I didn't have a vision. I didn't have dreams. Like, the only thing that I knew that I wanted to be someday was a mommy. I don't remember having fantasizing about a wedding day or what my dress was going to look like. I don't remember thinking about a relationship. I don't remember, I want to move here. I want to go see that. Like, I don't have any memories of that. But I knew that I had a heart that wanted to be a mom. And, I try to be really careful about the stories that I tell, right? Because what can happen is we can tell a story for so long. Like for an example, I could tell a story about the relationship with my mom. And that story, the story that I could tell you that would put me in this position of victimhood and isolation and all of these things, that's a really old story because that relationship has changed today. And I try to be really mindful of, has my story changed? Am I telling an old story, or is it a revised story with a new energy and a new idea and a new perspective? Because that's what all of this is about. But the bottom line is that, I had a mom, man, that had me when she was really young, and she had her own trauma. And she had her own aches and pains. And unfortunately, as children, we don't understand that. We don't understand that our parents have their own stuff, that they're trying to grow up also, trying to raise children, trying to figure out their stuff. And I didn't understand that until I had my own child, right? I didn't understand that we have a triangle of self-obsession IP that explains it really well. Like we are the center of the universe, and we think that everything is about us because we have no outside perspective of anything. I remember holding my son when he was a baby, and I was in this really volatile relationship with his dad. Just a FYI, I jump around all over the place, so let's just can't, you know what I mean? I say pack a lunch, we're going on a road trip. But I've gotten a lot better about remembering where I was. So if I don't finish a story, hit me up afterwards. More will be revealed. I got you. They're like, what the fuck happened to your son? You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, my God, I forgot that part. It was a really big deal. My bad. See, here we go. We've already, taken a side road. Okay, we're back. So I remember, being on the phone with his dad, and I was holding my son, and he was a baby, and his dad hadn't come home for, 3 days. And it's not like his dad just didn't come home. His dad would be out with other women, and his dad would be out using drugs, and I didn't have a car, and he held all of the finances away from me, and I didn't have any friends, and I was totally isolated from my family, and I was isolated from society. And I'm at home with this baby that's, my world, man, my baby, my love, like everything that I could ever hope for in being a mom and having this child, and not even being able to be present of a mother, because I'm so invested on what he's doing and where he's going and how he's feeling and who he's with and what it's doing to me, just self-obsessed and self-loathing and self-obsessed and self-loathing. And I remember being on the phone with him, and I'm holding my sweet little baby in my arms, and I'm just screaming, just at the top of my lungs, like that kind of screaming where your voice growls a little bit and spits flying out, and you're just like, ah, like want to shove the phone in your mouth and just chew on it. You know what I mean? You're so fucking pissed. And like just, ah, just screaming. And I remember like my son not saying, you know, he didn't make a sound or anything. And I looked down at him and the look of fear in this child's eyes. Just terrified. And he had no idea I was on the phone. He had no idea there was somebody on the other. He had no idea that I was battling with his dad. He had no idea that I was battling with myself. He had no idea that this wound that had been created as a child was being just reopened and reopened and reopened and reopened. Like, he had no comprehension of that. He just knew that this person that showed him and showered him with all of this love was now furious and raging and angry. And of course he's going to think that it's him. And so, like, I remember having these, like, recollections, man, these ideas, these, like, epiphanies that, like that was what my mom was experiencing. That's what my mom was experiencing. I had no idea that it didn't have anything to do with me, but I internalized all of it. And I got into this idea that, like, if I could just act the right way, that I would receive her love. If I could just say the right thing, then I would be accepted. If I could just act in a certain fashion, like, everything would be okay. If I could make sure she was okay, then I could feel okay. And a way that I really learned to do that, the first thing that I ever used was lying, way before a drug or a substance entered my body. I learned how to lie. I learned how to tell you what you wanted to hear in order to get your affection or your attention or your validation. And it just became real easy. It became real natural. So when I tell you that it's an honor to stand up here today and tell you the full and total truth, I mean that with everything, because it took me a minute. I would be up here saying some shit, and I would, like, catch myself mid-sentence, and I'd be like, that shit didn't even happen. You know what I'm saying? And I, like God just came and, like, smacked me up on the back of the head, and, like, people are looking at me like, did she just stop mid-sentence? Like, she good? You know what I mean? And I'm like, I can't go on. Like, fuck, man. And then I'm like, oh, my God, not only did that not happen, but I created the whole story because I was trying to get pills from the fucking hospital. You know what I'm saying? And I've been telling this story for so long that, like, I remember what I was wearing. I remember what it smelled like. I remember what I got this whole entire, like, I got the whole visualization. You know what I mean? And I believe that shit, man. Like, I believed so many lies that I told myself. I believed so many lies that I told other people. And that's the part of, like, being uncomfortable in my own skin, because, like, how are you supposed to know who you are and what you are and what you are all about when everything's a facade, when everything is just people-pleasing? And so not only am I a recovering addict, but I'm a recovering people pleaser. I'm a recovering codependent. And I say recovering because, y'all, I am not recovered, not even in the slightest bit. Not even, I mean, a little bit. But, like, thank goodness, hopefully my life will be a long life because I got a lot more work to do. But, you know, and so, like, the thing is that when I was 12 years old, there was an older girl at church. We were in the, and this is the thing. This is the fucking thing. Do y'all remember the DARE program? These motherfuckers, man. They came in sixth grade. Deputy Pewitt came in sixth grade with this, like, tray, right? Like, this tray, and it has, like, this plexiglass over it, and it has all these sparkly, shiny, colorful drugs with their little labels and their names on it, and they're telling you don't do this one and don't do that one, and definitely don't do that one because you'll experience euphoria. Woo! You know what I'm saying? I'm like, I definitely want to try that. I don't even know what euphoria is, but that shit sounds amazing. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, and I remember taking a picture with Deputy Pewitt, and I had my little, like, you know, whatever. It was the 90s. No, it was it was the 90s at that time. I'm all trying to get in. That's the ADD. I want to tell y'all about my little outfit. But anyways, so I'm taking a picture with Deputy Pewitt, and we're shaking hands, and like we're shaking hands like this, and I don't know if some of you remember what this used to mean, but like I had my hand behind my back, right, and that's like a, like, psych, you know? Yeah, so I'm like shaking his hand, I dare to say I have drugs, and my backhand saying like, fuck you, we can't wait. And so, and let me just tell you, the universe was like, all right, bitch, bet, because it was only like a few months later, right, that was the end of sixth grade. I go into this, like, seminary, summer little program or something, whatever, for church, and there was an older girl, and we're in the bathroom, and she said, here, sir, you want to snort a line of this? It's going to help you feel better. Anything to feel better, man. Anything to feel better. The amount of pain that I had trapped in my body, that I didn't even know was trapped in my body. I didn't understand that trauma had embedded itself into the fascia. I didn't understand that trauma had already altered my nervous system. I didn't know that the trauma that I had experienced had already changed the neural wiring of my brain, that my body was firing off differently than other people maybe that hadn't experienced some of the things that I had. I didn't understand that there was this chemical reaction already being created inside of me. I didn't understand that thinking that what was going on the inside needed to be fixed from the inside, right? And so what happened when I used that first drug is that I felt the euphoria. It changed the way that I felt, and I felt better. And so in that moment, I thought that all I need to do is find something on the outside to make everything that's going on the inside feel better. And so the rest of that 26-year story is me seeking things on the outside to make the inside feel better and losing at that terribly, terribly. Because I recreated the same situations one after the other. I sought out the same kind of people one after the other because of my low self-worth and my low self-esteem and these deep insecurities, this lack of self-love, this lack of vision, this inability to tell the truth or get honest about my feelings and emotions kept me so isolated. I didn't have outside resources. I didn't have people. And I'm not saying that there wasn't, but I wasn't giving them a chance to tell me, like, hey, baby, you probably shouldn't be doing that. Because you can't tell me shit. You know what I mean? What do you got to say anyways? Go worry about your own damn life. You know, like I got this. You know, but a lot of it came down to, like, not trusting other people. From a very young age, man, like, I learned that my feelings and my emotions weren't safe with people. And so I kept everything inside. I learned how to keep secrets. Maybe I'll save that for another part of the story. I'm so grateful for these rooms, man. Because, like, as I'm saying this stuff, there's, like, such a new story, you know? There's such a new story. There's such a new lease on life. There's such a new reality. There's such a different perspective, and I'm so grateful for that. Because 100%, if it hadn't been for the lowest bottom of the bottom that I possibly could get to and coming into Narcotics Anonymous, the change that's happened in my life would not have been possible. Because I was convinced that all I need to do is find the right person or find the right substance or find the right thing or find the right place or find the right outfit or find the right friend or whatever it was, right? I just needed to find the right thing on the outside and then maybe finally I would feel better on the inside. But the problem was that due to an inability to accept personal responsibility, I was actually creating my own problems. Have you ever, like, listened to a reading 200 times and then one day you just listen to it and you're like, holy fuck. I just got the chills right now. You're like, whoa, oh my God. Which is why being quiet during the readings is so important. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, for a lot of us addicts, man, we come into the room and I'll just be honest. It's, especially those who've been to a lot of meetings. It's like, oh God, 15 minutes. I can be late because the first 15 minutes are going to be doing, like, readings anyways, right? But I'll tell you what, like, it's just me. Oh, Johnny too? Okay, cool. I'm just saying. I'm not trying to speak for all of us, but right. But it's kind of like stepping on dope. You know what I mean? We don't want to step on the message. We want to give the newcomers. We want to give somebody that's struggling. We want to give old timers. We want to give somebody that came to listen to a message, man, an opportunity for that aha moment where something finally sinks in, no matter how many times we've heard something, no matter how many times we've read it or been told, because something special happens in this journey that we're in. Sometimes we get set up with just the right amount of things and just the amount of experiences and the way that things line up, and we're in this moment and somebody says something and it just hits your heart in a way that it never had before. And when I heard due to an inability to accept personal responsibility, due to an inability to be compassionate, due to an inability to take accountability, due to an inability to be responsible, to have commitment, to have faith and trust, to show empathy, to have self-compassion, self-love, to give try at all, right? Like, due to an inability in all of these ways, man, I was creating my own problems. Because the thing was, is that because I had been victimized, because I had been wounded as a child, like, I had this idea in my head that, like, because somebody else, like, created this problem, somebody else needs to come and fix it. Always waiting for the right way, the right person, the right thing. Like, I need somebody else to come and fix this pain. I need somebody else to come and fill this void that had been created out of a place in me that needed something, and it wasn't there. And there was something in me that really craved that thing, whatever that thing was. Like I really needed this thing, right? And like it wasn't there. And every time that I went to go find it or to have it and it wasn't there, like that void just got a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And then I start using things. I start using the lying. And I'm trying to stuff it in this place, man, to just like fill up this space, this whole thing that's happening in me. And I'm like stuffing and I'm stuffing. And the void is just expanding and expanding and expanding until some point you've just used so many things on the outside trying to fix what's going on in the inside, that darkness just like, whoom, and you're just taken over, and you're lonely, and you're isolated, and you're suffering. And I didn't have anybody to tell it to. The people that I was telling it to were the same people that were abusing me that I wanted to come fix the problem. It was this vicious cycle for so many years. At 21 years old, I got pregnant, and that pregnancy saved my life. I was at a place in my life where for sure, like, I would have ended up dead, or I would have ended up in prison for a very long time, because I had no concept of consequences. I had no concept of consequences. I had no respect for quality of life. I didn't think about what I was doing or how it would harm someone else, or that this weapon, when you like put it inside somebody's body, could like create a thing that like could get them in a lot of and like get me in a lot of trouble. And there was no concept of that. I just didn't care. I had no respect for my life. I had no respect for anybody else's life. And I was looking at a pretty hefty prison sentence for assault and battery with a weapon, and then there's cops involved, so then they put charges on the cops, and it was this whole big mess. And I found out that I was pregnant, and I quit everything, right? Quit everything. Like, I finally have something to love. Like, I finally have something that I love more than me that, like, is worth, like stopping all of this madness, but I was still in this relationship. And I had my son when I was 22, and my sweet Evan, man, he is such a special boy. He is such a special boy. And so I did the things that we do. I chased the relationship, and I stayed in the chaos, and I allowed, and I allowed, and I allowed, and the degradation and the humiliation and all of the ways that I just completely lost myself, trying to find validation and acceptance in other people, not knowing that, like, what I needed came from within. Not getting the things that I needed from the people that were close to me, because I didn't know how to advocate for myself. I didn't know how to ask for what it was that I needed. I didn't even know what it was that I needed to begin with. All I know is that I just didn't want to feel the, it was always that, I just don't want to feel the way that I'm feeling. I never wanted to feel the feelings that I had. I wanted to be everywhere but here, anywhere but here. And the disassociation got so real. And the self-harm got so real in so many different ways. All of the different ways that we can harm ourselves. All of the different ways that we cause harm to other people, right? And so, like, fast forward a few years. My son is 10 years old. And I was at the end of the road, man. Like, I was just absolutely destroyed. I was in a second relationship with a pretty heavy-duty narcissist that just wrecked me. Just absolutely wrecked me, and I couldn't get off the couch, and I couldn't feed my son, and I couldn't get in the shower, and I couldn't get him to school, and video games was raising him, and I hated myself so much, because all I wanted to do was be a present mom. All I wanted to do was like be this mom and have this experience with him, and I was being robbed of that, and I didn't even know I was being robbed of that, but I knew that I hated myself, that I couldn't give him more, and that I couldn't do better. And so it's a whole long story of how this whole thing happened, but ultimately my son and I got separated. I brought him to my mom's in Utah. I was in San Diego at the time. And I told him, baby, I'm going to go back and I'm going to pack my stuff. And he was so willing. Listen, dude, could we just go for 1 year? Just 1 year. I'm going to get my act together. I'm going to change locations, right? Geographical relocation. And I'm going to get a little bit of help. And I still wasn't being honest about what was going on. And he's like, yeah, mom, okay, we can do that. And I talked to his dad, and his dad was cool with it. And so I take him to my mom's in Utah, my sweet, trusting little boy. He was so trusting. He really believed that I was going to do that. I believed I was going to do the things I said I was going to do. I told him, I'm going to go back and pack the rest of my stuff, and I'll see you in 2 weeks. And I didn't make it back. And there's a lot of reasons why. There's a lot of bits of information in there of why that happened. But that would be me making excuses and trying to justify stuff. And we learn in our first step what that looks like. But the truth of the matter is because of my own fear and my own inability to step up, I ended up abandoning my son. And it took me a long time to admit that. It took me a really long time to admit that. Because the thing is I just felt like if you guys understood what I'd been through, like maybe you would get it. You know what I mean? Like if you knew how much I loved him or how hard I'd tried or that every time I went to make a decision, it turned into a dumpster fire and it wasn't my fucking fault. You know what I mean? I felt like if you understood like how victimized I had really truly been, like you'd have a little empathy and compassion, you'd stop fucking looking at me like that. And so like I went into homelessness. And like I was a closet user. I wasn't out running around and I wasn't doing all those things. I was self-medicating. I started self-medicating at 12 years old, and I had convinced myself for a number of years that I was self-medicating. I really truly believed that. It wasn't until I used for 26 years, and it wasn't into the later of those years that I even realized I was a fucking addict. I really believed that I was just self-medicating. And I end up homeless. And I'm in a whole new world, one that I wasn't prepared for. Like, you're either a predator or you're a victim out there, and I'm not a predator. And so I kept replaying this victim story. Like, how do I keep ending up here? How do I keep ending up in this place, man? And the trauma that happens out there in homelessness, man. In San Diego, my son ended up going to his dad's. I told him, like, you have to keep him. You have to keep him. There's some stuff going on with my mom. She's trying to do these, like, please do not let him go back. He ended up keeping him there. I was like, if I'm going to be homeless, I might as be homeless closer to my son. So I came back to L.A., and that was a whole nother ballgame. And like I was trying to find help, and I'd show up somewhere at Friday at 4 o'clock, and the place was closing, and they'd say you'd have to come back Monday, and there was just too many stops in between here and Monday, and I'd never make it back, you know. And kind of like just to get to the base of that story, because I'm gonna tell you guys about recovery too, right? But like I ended up in a tent. I ended up just barely existing in this homeless encampment, man. Like I was eating out of dumpsters, and I was taking trash out of other people's yards, and I got a picture of it on my phone if anybody wants to see it afterwards. I made it in the fucking LA Times, you know what I mean? They were trying to do, I don't know if they were like, this is the worst. I mean, y'all, it was bad. It was bad. Like, I was the crazy lady on the side of the road fucking talking to herself and screaming vulgarities at other cars and just absolutely lost my mind. I lost my teeth. I lost my mind. I lost all hope, man. Like, I was no longer trying to get well. I was just trying to survive. And I remember being in that tent with a needle in my arm, which I swore to God I would never do. I never thought I would be homeless. I never in a million years did I think I would end up strung out. And I remember sitting in the tent, knotted out with a needle in my arm, like crying that cry, man, that cry that like only the desperate understand, right? This cry that comes from inside, like where no tears are coming out. It's just anguish though. And just praying to a God that I didn't understand. I didn't even know that I was like really, I had no idea that this was a prayer. And I was just saying, God, please protect me from my own free will. I cannot make a choice to save my life. I had no idea I was working a step one and a step two and a step three. And something so magical happened. Something so magical happened. Like, not only did the help that I need come and find me, but I finally had the willingness to surrender. And it took a few months. It took a few months. And the thing about surrender, the special, special piece about surrender, listen, I am convinced. I am absolutely convinced. And for this, I am so grateful. I am so grateful for the life that I've lived. I am so grateful for the trauma that I've endured. I'm so grateful for those low bottom lows, man, and the things that I understand. Because here's the bit, is that so many of you women that I've been able to sit and talk with, when you tell me and you share with me the pains that you've experienced, I can tell you, like, I know what that feels like. I know where you feel that. I feel it too. Like, I understand you, that empathy, that one addict helping another is without parallel. I am so grateful for my experiences. That was not my story. This was not the vision. Being here with you guys, being flown in to tell you stories about my life, like, that was not the fucking vision. You know what I mean? Like, it's still a little weird to me, but here we are. But, like, I ended up in treatment January 18th, 2018. And y'all know I used every little bit of drugs that I had that morning. So my clean date's January 19th, 2018. And I've been clean. And it took me about 4.5 hours to even get in that van. It took me another 2 hours to get in the treatment center because I was terrified. I was terrified because I was involved. I was terrified because I was involved. And I'm so glad for the people that were patient with me, the people that took the time to just allow me to go through my process and walk in the way that I needed to walk in. And the real magic happened, y'all, when like Narcotics Anonymous, H and I came into that facility. I want to thank every single one of you that's in service to H and I, every single one of you that has gone and shared your story. It was only because fuck that facility, man. You got, listen, meds at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know what I'm saying? You're tripping. Mop what floor? You're crazy, you know? I'm fighting with everybody and everything. Y'all can tell me what to do. Like, first of all, just being indoors was really weird. I had been homeless for 6 years. So being indoors was really, really hard for me. Having walls around me was a whole entire adjustment. I was really uncomfortable. And I remember sitting in that room, still paranoid, still super, super crazy, and somebody reading How It Works. And mind you, my prayer was, God, please protect me from my own free will. I cannot make a choice to save my life. So when y'all read the third step off of that, I was tripping. Like somebody was in my fucking head that day, and then he went and wrote a little thing, and then he put everybody together in the same room just to mess with me. You know what I mean? Like I was convinced, really true story. Like my head went into that place, man, because how in the world are you going to talk about like surrendering my will, turning my will over? That was the very thing that I knew was my problem. And I didn't trust y'all to begin with, because let's just tell the truth. Like, first, you drove here in your own car, sure, you know? Okay, looking all nice, your jewelry's real, and you got all your teeth. I was, like, hella suspicious. There was no way. There was no way. There was no way. I had no idea that we recovered the way that we did, because, mind you, I came in, like, I got teeth today, but like, I clean them like a little violin in the morning, you know what I'm saying? Like, these are my teeth because I bought them, but I did not come in here looking like this. I had four little rabbit teeth in the very front. Everything was like, you know what I mean? From the side, it looked like little donkey teeth, like, shooting out. It was humiliating and embarrassing, and, like, what I would find happen, man, I'd start smiling, and I'd start laughing, and I'd cover my mouth because I was ashamed. And I would rob myself of an opportunity to feel joy. And I'd rob myself of this opportunity to just, like, be free and exposed and have fun. I was constantly just like this, you know? So we also get our teeth restored in Narcotics Anonymous, and that's pretty dope. Yeah. I'm not going to plug it because it's an outside issue, but whatever. So here's the thing, man, like I saw you guys in this light and this smile and this vibrancy, and like you had this thing, man, and I remember like sitting at the table, I had been asked to kind of sign the little court cards, and all of the clients were sitting on this side, and the panel was sitting on this side, and they asked me to come sit at the panel with them, and so this is the first time that I'm looking at the clients from this perspective, and the greenish skin color, and the drawn out faces, and we're probably all medded out, you know what I mean, and I remember the guy that was sharing, he says, you know, at some point you're going to have to make a choice. You're either going to be on this side of the table or you're going to be on that. And I was on this side of the table. And like, I've stayed on that side of the table ever since that day. Because in those rock bottoms, you guys, this is what I found. There is not one substance I can put in my body that will bring me the solution, that will bring me the feeling, that will inspire that change inside of me that I truly, truly desire, that I actually need, that actually feels good, that is sustainable, like the work that I've done and found in Narcotics Anonymous. There isn't one single thing that I can take from the outside and put on the inside, and it doesn't always have to be drugs and alcohol, because there's many ways that we can use. None of the things that I've ever used on the outside ever fulfilled me on the inside the way that doing the work does. I got into the work. I got close to people that were doing the work. Like, I listened really carefully to the gist for today where it says our new associations are on people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. Like, I didn't play around, man. And this is no disrespect to anybody that still hasn't figured it out or doesn't know yet, or you're on the fence or you're just not sure, because I get it. I get it. And we're all at exactly where we're supposed to be at in this journey according to your plan with your higher power. It's not where I think you should be. It's not where anybody else thinks that you should be. We are at where we need to be according to whatever it is that we need to learn in order to evolve into this bigger, better place of life that we continue to, like, progress into. right? But like knowing that I was either kicking it with people who have like found a new way of life or were at least actively seeking it was really important to me. About 6 months in, man, I had the courage to go look for my son again, because that was part of the whole bit. Like, I had lost contact with my son for the last 2 years of being homeless. I had no idea where he was. He had no idea where I was. And come to find out, like, he was under the impression that I had already passed away. And so July 22nd, I was sitting at a meeting on the beach. I was sad because it was his birthday. And I remember the sponsor that I had at the time, she was like, "Do you want to go shopping? Do you want to go get some dessert?" Like, trying to help me feel better. And I was like, "No, I want to go find my fucking son." I had an idea of where I thought that he was. I just hadn't had the courage to show up yet. And all I had was this little spark of hope, man, that maybe he would welcome me back. And there was also a really good chance he could tell me to go fuck off. And I had it coming. And I knocked on the door. And he was, like, so tall. The last time that I had seen him, like, I could put my arm around his shoulders like this. And he's all tall with his deep voice. And he gave me a big old hug. And we've been inseparable ever since. And I've had to do a lot of work, you guys, a lot of work, because, like, I didn't understand that, like, I don't have to control everything. Control is a really big issue in my life. Like, I had to work step 1, 2, and 3 quite a few times. Quite a few times. Like, I would work 1, 2, and 3, switch sponsors. Work 1, 2, and 3, switch sponsors. Work 1, 2, and 3, switch sponsors, right? Because we learn how to choose people in here. And that's part of the whole experience. We choose someone, and we're probably choosing somebody that's similar or familiar with something that we're used to before, and maybe it doesn't suit us, and maybe it harms us, and maybe we're not comfortable, and maybe we can't tell the whole entire truth. But part of this process is learning how to choose people. Part of this process is advocating for ourselves. Part of this process is saying, like, this is no longer serving me. Thank you so much for everything that you invested, but I think I'm going to go in another direction. No hard feelings, no harm done. This was an opportunity for me to learn something about myself and a little bit more of what it is that I want, have the courage to walk away, choose me, and go seek something else, try that thing out. And if that doesn't, if that's not the thing, well, then I just keep looking. We're not married to our sponsors, right? So having this opportunity to work a 1, 2, and 3 was really special, because the relationship that I started building with my higher power is like, there's just no words. But I know what it feels like. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to choose my own higher power. And I want to tell you guys, this is a spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. This is a spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. This is a spiritual program, like AKA Narcotics Anonymous. They tricked you guys, right? This is a spiritual program. There's spiritual work to be done here. Our spirits have been devastated and destroyed and neglected and ignored by us. Not even to say all of the things that have happened from other people, but I'll tell you what, the amount of self-abandonment that I created was far worse than any other abandonment that I allowed or experienced outside of me. The way that I stepped away from, listen, if you liked it, I loved it. Loved it. You got one? I've had those for like years. You know what I mean? 3 of them at home. I don't even use them anymore. You know? Like, it doesn't matter what it is. Like, not knowing who I was, not knowing what I needed, not knowing how to go about it. The beauty of this program, getting into the work, understanding spiritual principles, really starting to look at what is it that's going on inside of me? How do I continue getting in my own way? Getting into the work is important, because that's the only way that we learn about the spiritual principles. And what we've learned in our reading is that, I just drew a blank. Help me out, Michelle. Listen, we'll get back to it, whatever. I'm not supposed to hit it yet anyways, I guess. And the work was really hard, right? Because, like, I don't want to look at myself, man. Like, first of all, I don't want to do all this fucking writing. And second of all, like, it gets really uncomfortable. And then I start experiencing this freedom. And then I start experiencing, like, God, it wasn't that bad. And then I start being able to tell other people what's going on. And I realize that every time I go into a meeting and I share, like, I'm working a fifth step. I'm saying something out loud. What I love about the fifth step that I think is so beautiful is it's not even about admitting it to God and another human being, man. It's like me saying it out loud and not being worried about the consequences. Me feeling I'm not going to be condemned to HE double hockey sticks because I finally told the truth about some shit. You know what I'm saying? Like it has nothing to do with it says about, oh, well, we think that our, you know, higher power already knows. It's not about that. It's about us. It's about us being able to say what we need to say. Listen, I'm taking ownership of this thing. I understand where the root cause was. I understand how this thing was created. I get to have an idea of where my resentments are and how I hold other people accountable for the things that I need to be looking at. And then I get to do a 6 and 7 step, man, and I start to understand, like, I'm not big on the character defects. I'm just not big on that word, and that's, like, you know, we can move things around the way that we need to move them around, but really what it comes down to is just survival skills, this whole entire mask that we created in order to just survive that is no longer serving us. It is no longer serving, like, a positive movement in our life, man, and, like, the ability to clear out the air and make our amends and understand how good it feels to be able to say, like, I take total ownership of that regardless of what their part was, but, like, I just want to be able to walk into any single room and feel free, right? I want to be able to walk into any single memory and not have something haunting me. And the beautiful part about step work, man, is it really allows us to heal from the past. It really allows us to start really working on that inner child work, on our needs, on our desires, on the deepest wounds. And not only is step work really important for us to be able to look at the past and start kind of unpacking what's going on. Oh, nope, I lost it again, never mind. It'll come up sooner or later, whatever. But not only does it allow us to start working on the past, but it prepares us for the future. Because when life gets real, we're going to hope that we have some tools in our belt to deal with what's going on. And in April, my life got so real. I got in this relationship with this man that I love with my whole entire heart. I haven't felt this way about somebody in my entire life. Like, we're just absolutely crazy about each other. And it got to a point in the relationship where, I had to walk away. There was things that he needed to work on, and there was things that I needed to work on, and it was really fucking painful because it was the first time in my life that I ever chose myself. Like, being in love with somebody and just, like, not being able to be there anymore. Like, I've never been able to just walk away like that. I've never chosen myself. And it wasn't, like, more than a week after getting all my stuff and all of the things that go with that that I went to a doctor's appointment because I found a lump on my breast. And a couple weeks later, I got diagnosed with invasive ductal carcinoma, breast cancer. And that man did not let me slip away. Like, not only was it the first time that I chose myself, but it's the first time somebody chose me. It was the first time that somebody chose me. Because I was afraid and my life was falling apart and I was devastated and I was in so much fear and I was still angry and I was still hurt and there were all of these things, man, and he did not give up. He did not give up. As painful as it was for him to not have like the same me show up that showed up in the very beginning, man, that man did not back down, not even a little bit. And he gave me the space that I needed, but he showed me so much unconditional love. And the first time in my life that I was chosen, and that feeling of security, that feeling, that bond, that it's terrifying. It's terrifying. Because what's happened in this whole entire thing with this cancer diagnosis, and this is what happens in a lot of our experiences, a lot of our darkest moments, right? I find out the most about myself in the deepest, darkest parts of my own shadow. The valley of my own shadow is where I learn the most about myself. The insecurities that come out, the fears, the lack of self-worth, the lack of do I really trust the process like I say I do? When times are really, really hard, and I was sharing with a friend that I made today, like being in that place where you're so devastated, where it's so dark, where there's enough evidence to know that, like, there will be light at the end of the tunnel, I just don't see it yet. And after the surgery, I had a mastectomy in the beginning of August. And what was happening, you guys, is that, like, there was a lot of feelings happening. There's a lot of stuff coming out of me, and I wasn't being honest about it. I wasn't telling the truth. I wasn't telling anybody. People were asking me how I was, and I didn't want them to be worried. And I'd say, like, oh, I'm okay. And I was not okay. I was not okay. I did not feel like my feelings and emotions were safe with people, and I was keeping everything held inside because, like, I have this thing about self-sufficiency, right? And we learned about it in our literature that self-sufficiency, it's like this illusion of self-sufficiency. That what happens is that I'm afraid that if I ask for what I need and you don't show up the way that I need you, then I'm gonna feel let down. And that little girl inside that didn't have somebody come and save her when she wanted to be saving is gonna be re-traumatized all over again. So I'll just do it myself. And so I ended up in a really, really dark place. September 14th, we had this Just for Today that's like, does anybody timing me, by the way? Because I didn't set an alarm. Okay, 20 minutes, 10 minutes? 12? 22? Perfect. I love that for us. I love that for us. Cool. So September 14th, there's this piece that it was about secrets, right? And there's this piece that says, big or little, our secrets represent spiritual territory we are unwilling to surrender to the principles of recovery. Here it is. There are two things. There are two things more than any other thing in the whole entire world that's going to defeat us. Defeat us. Us. Not just me. Not somebody that's working the steps a bunch of times. Not somebody that sponsors. Not somebody that has spiritual pride. Like us. Like all of us. No matter where you are in your journey, we all qualify under this umbrella. Two things more than anything else. This was the thing I was trying to think of, so here we are. Two things more than anything else will defeat us in our recovery. Defeat us. Man, I don't know about you. I came in defeated. I'm not trying to get in recovery and be defeated all over again. And this part's super, super important. And I think that we really kind of skin over this thing sometimes, you guys. But an indifference, like, it's just whatever. It's whatever. An indifference or intolerance, like, I just refuse. I will not. I cannot. I just won't. An indifference or an intolerance towards spiritual principles. Defeat, that will defeat me in my recovery. And if I'm not practicing honesty and I'm keeping secrets, I'm not practicing spiritual principles. I'm in the process of being defeated. And I ended up in a really, really dark place. A really, really dark place. And I was suffering incredibly, and I wasn't telling people the truth. I had no idea how hard it was to say that I'm not okay. I didn't understand, and maybe some of you don't understand, or maybe you won't understand until you get there, but like, I never thought that I was the kind of person that would have a hard time being like, I'm not okay, how are you? I'm not okay. I'm not okay, and I need help. And I was suffering in silence, and it got really, really dark, and it got really, really bad, and I was really, really scared, because throughout my life, those times of really deep darkness did not turn out well. And I'm scanning for evidence, I'm scanning for threats and all of the ways that I could compare to like what's happened in the past, and I'm terrified. And now I'm like all the way down the road in some other things, and I've already seen how the future's gonna play out, and it's not very pretty, and I'm self-loathing, and I'm self-loathing, and I'm self-loathing. And what we learn in Living Clean, it says self-loathing is just another form of self-obsession. And I'm obsessed, and I'm obsessed, and I'm obsessed, man. And I had stopped going to meetings, and I had stopped sharing out loud, and the first thing I had to do, man, was just get out and start telling people I'm not okay. And the power in that, the beauty in that, and the people that were put into my path. And I had a friend that suggested to me, Sarah, like, maybe the way that you prayed before, the reason why it doesn't feel the same is because, like, you need to find a new normal. We need to find new ways to do things. I need to find a new story to tell. What's happened is not part of this part of the process. And so she suggested to me to pray, like, God, please speak to me in a dialect that I can understand. Just a very simple prayer. And so you know what happened is the right people started getting put in my path, saying the right things. People would call, and I don't like answering the phone. I'm not a big talking on the phone kind of person, but I would answer the phone, and they would say the thing that I needed to hear. Or they would shoot me a text message. Or I would hear something in a song. Or a beautiful raven would fly by, and I knew that it was just for me. And all of my little woo-woo, wacky, like, spiritual practices, like the special things, the right things, I was being spoken to in a dialect that I could understand. And I started feeling not so alone. And I started reconnecting with people that I needed to connect with. And I started, like, rebuilding the support system, right? Like, and this shit happened really quick, you guys. It didn't take, like, it took, like, 2 weeks. And then I stayed there in 2 weeks. So that was the longest 4 weeks of my life. And the power that we have of just sharing what's happening, just telling another person immediately. And then I'm kind of able to get into the work a little bit. I'm able to start applying those spiritual principles. I'm able to start feeling a little more confident in my experience. Our ability to connect with other people is so important. secrets is it's the definition is something along the lines of like something that we keep from or we're meant to keep from. It's not meant to be known with other people. Like, I don't want you guys to know about it. I don't want you to see it. I don't want you to know about it. I'm keeping it a secret. And what we know in these rooms is our secrets keep us sick. And if my disease is centered in my thinking, and all I'm doing is thinking, I'm trying to analyze it. I'm trying to figure out in our seventh step, it says it's not something that needs to be analyzed. When it comes to my shortcomings, this isn't a step to be analyzed. I need to go straight into faith and the ability to understand, like, when I'm powerless. That the first step can apply to everything in my life. It's not just about drugs and alcohol. It's everything that I'm experiencing. It's fear, it's control, it's insecurities. It's this deep lack of self-worth that I'm just now realizing I still have. Being in this relationship with this man that I love with my whole entire heart, like I don't see myself with anybody else for the rest of my life. I love this man with everything, and there's a part of me that feels like when I go back on October 20th to do my first round of chemo and I lose all my hair, and I lose my eyelashes, not the fucking eyelashes, you know? And I lose even more weight because I've lost a lot of weight in this process already, that I'm not going to be worthy of his love. There's something in me that really believes that. And that's what's so crazy about those lies. You guys know those things. That there's something that has to do with that my image is my self-worth, and that and what's going on the outside is what makes me more valuable or makes somebody else more valuable or makes me less valuable. That the things that we have, and it doesn't have to be the vanity and the looks, and I'm just being really honest with you guys, man. Because it's the only way that I can get free is when I tell you the nitty-gritty, gross, dark fucking truth, whether you choose to judge it or not. It's okay because it's my story and that's my truth, and this is how I get free. This is how you get free. Because no matter what it is, if we feel like something, if our value is based on this thing that we have in our life, with or without, can we still stand on our two feet? How strong is our relationship with other people in this fellowship? How strong is our relationship with our higher self? And how honest can we be about ourselves? That is the vision of hope. That is the vision of hope. That we can tell the truth, that we can expose those secrets, that we have at least one person that we can tell the realest, dealest truths about, man. It's so important that we get into the literature and we see where we're not alone, that we can see where we're influenced by experiences from other people that was made just for us, man. And let me tell you, like, not one single time have I thought about picking up. It hasn't even crossed my mind. And that's really incredible because for 26 years, that was my only solution. It hasn't crossed my mind because I know that the relief that I'm seeking comes from a one, a two, and a three, first and foremost. Understanding where I'm powerless, understanding where I need to relinquish that control, seeing where I'm justifying, where am I valid, where am I trying to like fill in all of the blanks instead of looking at what's really going on. Do I really believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity, can restore me to self-love, can restore me to compassion, can restore connection, can restore hope, can restore faith, and restore trust? Because we lose those things. They're not always, no matter how strong we are in them, like they come and they go, and that's okay because that's the process of learning. That's how we get stronger. That's how we get better. We take a couple steps back and we're like, damn, like I really could have used that thing. And instead of shaming ourselves and being like, I fucking knew better, we just use the thing and we try again. And maybe it works and what, maybe it doesn't, but we don't fucking give up. We just do not give up. This process is not supposed to be easy. The war is not over. I hear that sometimes and I'm sorry, you guys, but the war is not over. There's this internal battle that we'll experience, but the thing is that we have what it takes to show up for ourselves. We are worth showing up for ourselves. We are worth showing up for each other. Finding a spiritual connection that feels good for you. Listen, if you're being told that the way that you practice or what you believe is the wrong way because it's not what somebody else believes, please know that is not Narcotics Anonymous. And we learn in our 11th step. Listen, prayer and meditation is so important, and you don't have to wait till you're on your 11th step to practice it. We learn that, like, at any time we come to any sort of certainty, we're robbing ourselves on a grander scale. Because our spirituality will evolve. We put ourselves or our God in a box and we're so certain that this is what it is and this is only what it is and it can't be anything else. I'm robbing myself on a grander scale, and that comes with everything in my recovery. The moment that I put anything in a box and I've closed the box and this is what it is and that's where it's going to stay and it's always going to be there and it always needs to look like that. And don't you fucking come close to it and touch it because it can't move, you know? Like, I'm robbing myself on a grander scale, man. We need to be flexible. We need to be able to like have this dance and this ebb and flow with the situations of life, because we learn the most about ourselves when we're put to the trial, when we're put to the fire, when we're put to the very, like, how much can we tolerate? And I know that there's some people in this room that are in a lot of pain today. I know there's a lot of people that are suffering on a level that you haven't told anybody about because you feel that your feelings and your emotions aren't safe with someone. It's so important to get honest. It's so important to reach out. And if it's not the same people, because you've told your stuff to somebody and they violated that trust, maybe ask in a little prayer to be connected with somebody that you can trust and that will value your truths. The work that we're allowed to do in here, the work that we're given the opportunity to do in here, is not only life-saving, but it increases the quality of our life. I'm so glad that I got to come in here and be with you guys. Like, the way that all my treatments and everything have been lining up have just made it, like, possible for all of these really cool things to, like, still get to happen. So I go home on Monday. I'm also completing a hepatitis C treatment right now. I have about 2 weeks left of that. So as soon as that's done, you gotta fucking love Narcotics Anonymous. Like, only in Narcotics Anonymous where you're like, I got Hep C from probably using somebody else's spit when I was slamming dope, and I'm almost done with the treatment. You guys are like, woohoo! Fuck yeah! You know? You gotta love Narcotics Anonymous, man. Like, where else are you gonna get this? Where else are you gonna get this? We are so fortunate today in man's entire history, and women. You know what I'm saying? Let's just take it easy on that shit, but... Right? And man and women's entire, we are more fortunate than we've ever been. The amount of information we have, the amount of connection and seek outside help, read books, get curious, Google shit, write stuff, read stuff, talk about stuff. Like there's an endless amount of information. Learn how to regulate our nervous system. Tap into breath work. Put your feet in the grass. Allow yourself to reconnect to nature if you don't know what your higher power is. And I'm pretty sure that something will show up for you in that way. It really did for me. We have a beautiful opportunity to allow for ourselves to be messy, imperfect, the courage to be imperfect, as I like to see it. It's not about perfection. That's an imaginary thing. They just put this little plateau up here. Just know that it's there. You're never going to reach it, but it's there. You know, just so you know it's here, so you always feel like you're not, you know, but don't even worry about it because you're never going to get there. It's impossible. So what about the courage to be imperfect? What about the courage to be messy and scared and insecure, and to be able to tell somebody, like, I'm afraid if I'm bald, you'll leave me? Giving people an opportunity to show up for us, asking for help. I didn't know how hard that was either, and it's really fucking hard, man. It's really hard, but, like, I know that we're built to do hard things. I get to go home and be with my son, a beautiful 23-year-old that thinks I'm, like, the coolest thing in the whole entire world, and I think the same about him. I get to go home to this handsome-ass man that I am so... Go Daniel. You hear that, baby? In case you listen to this, Johnny says, go Daniel. I get to go home to a relationship with my mom that is blossoming and blooming and healing in ways that I never thought possible. I get to go back home to friends and connections and opportunities. Like, even though I'm going back and I'm looking at this whole entire chapter, like, this cancer thing is, like, it's kind of only just begun. Everything that we've already been through, like, there's still so much more to come. But I'm not doing it alone. But that's only because I chose not to do it alone, because I was trying to do it alone in that isolation. It's not backing into a corner and not being able to get clean, or what is it, backing into a corner that we can't get out of clean. Like, that wasn't my fear. My fear is backing into a corner, being so dark and comfortable that I never leave there. We are meant to thrive. We are meant to live. We are meant to love. We are meant to heal. We are meant to feel that hope. And that's what we have in Narcotics Anonymous. I want to share one little piece with you, and I'm going to shut up. This is from Living Clean. It's on the last page. It says, the more progress we recognize in ourselves and our fellows, And that means something. The more progress we recognize, like I'm looking for the good. I'm looking for the progress. I'm looking for like the positive things in people, not always trying to analyze. And listen, I'm super fucking judgmental, very critical. I talk a lot of shit. I'm not trying to pretend that I'm like all the way healed and like that's, I ain't that bit. You know what I mean? I'm not all love and fucking light, regardless of what you guys would like to believe. But this is the thing. The more progress that I'm recognizing in other people, whatever my perspective is, that's what I'm choosing to see. That's what I'm going to see, right? The more progress we recognize in ourselves and our fellows, the more we know is possible. What first appeared to us as a way out now offers us a way in. Into a life we hadn't imagined. Into joy. Into hope. Into growth that never stops. We continue to get better. We continue to discover new ways to live, new freedom and new paths to explore. We travel together as one in fellowship, and we pave the road as we walk it for all who may follow, no matter how far we have come or how far we know we have to go. When we live clean, the journey continues. And we have one message in Narcotics Anonymous. Our message is hope, and our promise is freedom, that an addict, any addict, even the ones that gets in their own fucking way, even the one that was like, listen, this might work for you guys, but you got to know when I'm involved, it's probably not going to be the same. Or maybe you didn't use like me, or maybe your trauma wasn't like me, or maybe you don't know how hard I've tried, man. Like even that addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. The lie is dead, y'all. We do recover. Thank you.